Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer recruiting experts. Now, here's your host, Chris Cousins.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast. My name is Chris Cousins and the founder of SI USA. We have another fantastic episode, this time slightly different. We've brought on one of our staff members, or a new staff member at least, to kind of talk to the audience about his experiences. So the person in question is Kim Kombutho. He is based in Nairobi, Kenya. Our paths first crossed when we were, it was 2015 now. So I was helping run a PDL side, which is now USL2. He's playing, this is in Florida, he's playing for us. And that's when I first met him. He's a fantastic guy. He's gone on and won an NAIA national championship, various other stuff. And now he's actually back in Kenya for the last couple of years, helping players with their pathways, really. And we've launched, as of today, the SIUSA Africa Division. And Kim is actually in charge of that. He's the best person for it. We've been working together on things the last couple of years, and we've helped a number of players move on to the States and Spain, actually, as well. So it's the episode is it's long, but it's worth it. It tells you about, obviously, all his kind of story, but a lot of it is like the mental challenges that he's had when he moved to the US. And there's a lot more than a typical interview about, like, tells your life story. It's really good for players to listen to. And I'd say it's good for everybody, no matter where you are in the world, to have a listen to it. So I'll let him do the talking. It's a lot better than me trying to explain in a short synopsis. But Kim is, like I say, he's a fantastic guy. He's great to listen to. I enjoyed speaking to him. We planned on an hour, but it went over just because I couldn't stop him. I wanted to carry on and listen to the full story, and it was really enjoyable. So yeah. Aside from that, we here at SIUSA, we've just announced our first ever college preparation camp. The first one's going to be in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and that's on the 21st, 22nd of November this year, 2020. We've kind of listened to what everyone's been talking about, what the need for their, I mean, players just struggling to get video and the right sort of advice and stuff like that. So we're holding one in North America, got all our staff together. Southern States Soccer Club has kindly agreed to host it. They've got fantastic facilities there. So, and then also VO, our partners, the camera company, they're going to jump on in it as well, help with the footage. So yeah, it's going to be a great weekend. Players come in, they're going to walk away with all the tools, all the knowledge, everything they need to get recruited, videos, just the experience of all our staff. We've got guys who've turned pro through the draft system and whatnot, so they're going to be there explaining that sort of thing as well. So they're going to walk away with their minds blown, but also with the right sort of tools in hand after a couple of days. So if you know of anybody who's interested in that, where we have spaces available, the website for that is www.srusacamp.com. That's srusacamp.com. And yeah, send them, if you know of anyone, tell them to go to the website. Aside from that, we're all good. Everyone's healthy. Events are starting to roll again, especially in the UK, where I'm based out of. The company is helping a lot of players. So that's it. I'll keep it to that. I'll let Kim do the talking. So this is the Inside College Soccer Podcast. My name's Chris Cousins, and I'm interviewing Kim Kombutho. So enjoy. Kim, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Chris.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure always speaking to you, Kim. So a lot of people will know about who you are. A lot of people will not know who you are. So can you just give us a bit of an introduction about who you are, what you're about, your background, everything about you, and we'll kind of go from there.
Wow, it's a long time since somebody asked me that. Sure. So I am from Nairobi, Kenya. I played in the United States for 8 years. I played at the academy level. I played at college level, NCAA Division I level, NAIA level. I'm a national champion in 2015. I played in the USL. I think it's the USL 2 now, but it was the PDL back then. And then in 2017, moved back home to Kenya. Since then, I've been helping more African players to attain scholarship opportunities to play in places like the US, through SRUSA, of course. And I run True Talents of Africa. I'm also one of the coaches. And we have a program with about 120 students. And yes, I also work with the government in the Ministry of Sports in talent development. So yes, that has been my journey. Football has been with me since I was a small boy, and it has changed my life, if I'm honest. It has opened doors for me that I never thought would open, and given me opportunities that honestly most people from where I come from don't get. And so I'm very happy to try and help more African student athletes attain the same kinds of opportunities that I got, or even better. So that's
cool.
Me.
I mean, yeah, no, that's in a nutshell. So let's go back then. Let's start from nearly the beginning. Born in Nairobi, Kenya, right? Let's fast forward. Like, when did you start playing football, soccer? Like, what's the kind of background? Let's get to the early stages and go from there.
Sure. So I was about, I think the first time I remember actually saying, this is something I want to pursue, I was about 7 years old. And at that time, we didn't really have, organized football. I mean, I was in school and I was playing in school, but there was nothing really organized. And my father used to coach, some of us just, playing even in the estate where I was staying. And I was in school just playing and enjoying myself. Started to get a love for the game. I was also a good swimmer, by the way, but I didn't really like swimming because of all the pressure. So I stopped swimming and just focused more on football. And by the time I was 10 or 11, football was everything in my life and all I thought about. So I joined a football academy here in Nairobi, started playing more consistently, playing in the school team and winning different awards here and there, and just really trying to find opportunities thereafter, because my dream was to play for Arsenal. I used to watch Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp. Those were like my biggest idols, growing up. So the English Premier League is very popular here in Nairobi, so that was all we were exposed to, and that was when I fell in love with the game and I actually tried to pursue it.
So let's fast forward a few more years. When did you start taking it serious, and like what led you to kind of head to the US? Because obviously I know this, that you didn't go straight into the college system. You went somewhere before that. So can you tell us a little bit about that one?
So I started to, a lot of African, especially East African players experience kind of a lack of guidance and a lack of opportunity. I was growing up in Nairobi and playing for many different clubs, and it was just not clear, where do I go from here? How do I make it, to London? That was all in my mind. But, at the same time, my parents were thinking, okay, this kid, it seems like he's obsessed with this thing. How do we get him to where he wants to go? And so we were all trying to do research, different kinds of opportunities. And this was in 2006. Was it 2006? No, it was 2009. 2009, when my parents had found out about IMG Academies in Florida, in Bradenton. And so my brother and I trained for a while, and then we decided to, go and see how it is there, and we were supposed to go for a soccer camp. It was like a summer camp. All of this was very new to us, and I remember when we got there, everything was just like complete I remember being so anxious I couldn't even eat before the first day of training. We got there at like 4 a.m. Training was at 8 a.m. the next morning. Oh, that
was
morning.
Was this the first time? Was this the first time you've ever been to the United States?
No, it was the second time. It was the second time, but the first time was a short, like, you know how it's different when you go somewhere and you just maybe you're visiting, you know, some relatives or some friends, and then you leave again. It's different when you actually live.
So you there. had a little bit of understanding what to expect as a country as a whole. Like some kids who go to the US for the first time, like imagine you doing that IMG thing without ever visiting the US before. You'd probably be more anxious.
Yeah, true. That's true. And it was also quite overwhelming because obviously IMG wasn't what it is now in terms of the size and the magnitude of everything, but I just remember seeing, you know, the playing fields, and I was like, wow, this is incredible, you know. Just the infrastructure I had never experienced, and nothing like that exists here in Nairobi. I mean, the kind of facilities that I would compare it to back then was like the National Stadium of Nairobi, which is called Kasarani, which is where the national team plays all their games. So that's the only real exposure I had to those kinds of facilities. And so we did this football camp, and I mean, from the first day, I noticed that, you know, I'm good. I can hang with some of those guys who were playing, and of course that gave me more confidence. And as time went on, I started to get more confident. At the end of those 2 weeks, you know, some of the coaches said, hey, this guy, where they spoke to my parents, and, you know, my parents told me, hey, they want you to join the full-time program. And now it was kind of like, this was a big investment for my family, because, you know, there was no scholarship financial. Offered initially. So there was no scholarship offered initially, and it would have been a big, you know, investment for them. So they tell me now, in their minds, they said, okay, let him do just 1 year. You know, that's what we can do. And then, you know, maybe he falls out of love with football and goes back home. You know, at this time, by the way, I'm only 15 years old. So they're trusting me to stay in America on my own at 15. And
how did you feel about that? Did you like that? Or was it, do you get homesick?
Initially, it was everything I'd ever dreamed of, you know? It was exactly what I wanted. But after a while, you know, I was, you know, looking back now, I realize how it affected me in terms of, you know, how anxious I was all the time. Because, you know, I'm in a place where these people are speaking to me. They're speaking English, but I don't understand them. You know, it was just so overwhelming. And I dealt with a lot of anxiety. To the point where I was like struggling to eat sometimes, or before training, I would just, you know, just try and be by myself. I was very quiet. And so that's eventually what happened, is I joined the full-time program. And then that's when...
Do you mind me just jumping in there? Sorry, Kim. Do you mind me just jumping in there? You keep mentioning about the anxiety you had and stuff. And yeah, mental issues is huge in sport and in the world right now. But like, can you kind of talk about like how you dealt with that? So I'm interested to know that you kept saying like, oh, I wouldn't eat, I was really anxious. But now you seem like a calm person, and you, I mean, who knows? But like, what did you do to kind of help yourself through that?
Oh man, I don't even, you know, the thing is, at that time, mental health isn't something that I was exposed to or even had knowledge of, especially coming from a place like Kenya. You don't, I mean, a man is supposed to be a man, and you're not supposed to express a lot of emotions and things like
that.
Yeah,
and it's the same everywhere in the world.
Yeah, true. So I was just having these, in fact, I didn't know how to define it. I wouldn't define it. If you had asked me, hey, why are you so quiet, or why are you, at that time, I wouldn't be able to say, okay, I'm just feeling really anxious right now. The only word I knew how to describe it as was nerves. I just felt nervous a lot of the time because I knew I had a lot to prove. And this is everything that I had ever asked for. So I wanted to
prove myself. You had a big financial investment. Sorry to interrupt. You had a big financial investment from your parents. You're obviously, it's a different country. There's nerves, there's... well, just anticipation, but also Yeah, you've got a lot of people want to make sure you do well, but you probably couldn't handle the pressure of that straight away. Is that right? Did you say?
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I was in. You see, what I had done here in Kenya, I was in an international school, so I was doing the British IGCSE system, which is basically the international version of the GCSE system.
Yeah.
So when I went to America, I had just finished that system. I just finished my IGCSE exams, and I had skipped 1 year in my education. So I was actually 15 when I finished my IGCSE education. So when I went to America, I didn't start in high school. I actually started college classes immediately. So I was doing postgrad courses at the University of Miami that was on campus at IMG. I didn't go to the local high school.
Right.
And so now I'm in an environment where the people who are my classmates are, you know, 3-4 years older than me. At the same time, I hadn't matured in myself in terms of, I would say mentally, I'd matured well enough to the point that my parents could trust me with that kind of responsibility. But I mean, physically, I was still a kid. I was just, and I remember even just in the academy, I remember looking at the other guys and all the coaches were saying, hey, you need to get bigger. You know, you need to get bigger. And so I started to eat a lot of food because I was playing as a center back, and of course, you know, size is something that matters in the US. So, you know, just even think about it now, it's just so many things that were thrown at me that I'm grateful that I was able to get through. So yeah, there was that as well.
Are you glad you did it? Like, obviously it's a stupid question that, so I presume the answer is yes, maybe not, but are you glad that kind of took that step? Is there'd be a lot of people that would be like, I would love to do that and even have the opportunity but never do it, and you got to the right.
Yeah, I would mature, say
like young men that I've come across.
I would say it was the best decision I ever made in my life, and honestly, if I knew what it was going to entail, I don't think I would have made that decision, because it was a lot for a 15-year-old kid. And when I look back on it, there's still moments I have now. I mean, in fact, if I'm really open and honest about it, there are moments when I was 23, 24, that I would wake up in the middle of the night and have dreams of, you know, when I was actually leaving my family at 15. So I know that there's a little bit of trauma that I experienced, but it also made me fit for life after the experiences, and that's what I'm really grateful for.
That's really interesting, because like you say, like, use the word trauma. Sorry, this is turning into a mental health podcast. It's just interesting. No, but it's just interesting because obviously I've known you for things like probably 5 years now, and it's just kind of like never really spoke in depth about it. I'm always interested to know how people got to where they are. And It's like anything I talk about all the time, where people like start off, like even people in my hometown, for example, they always talk about, oh, I wish I did that, wish I did this, wish I did that. And then they never get out of the comfort zone and never really do what they want to do. I mean, I've been to Nairobi myself, and there's obviously a lot of places around the world where it's definitely a culture shock from a sense of from what that is to going to IMG. So I can imagine, well, I can't imagine, but I can slightly imagine the picking you up, landing you there, and kind of all the issues that would bring. Because if you smoothly transitioned into moving to the US as a 15-year-old like Kenyan boy and had zero issues, I mean, I'd be very surprised at that. I mean, I can't see ever happening. So it's obviously good to have. I'm guessing. Well, IMG, they might have had support for you, or just kind of took it on yourself. Good parents, good family, but there's a lot of kids who maybe wouldn't survive that trauma. The trauma is the out of your comfort zone. That's what I presume it is, and there might be other things as well, but it doesn't matter. But So moving on, you're IMG. You've finished high school at 15 in a sense, because the IGCSE things. So where's the decision that took you into college?
Okay, initially my first year at IMG, I wasn't playing as, let me talk about the first few months. One of the first, I think within the first month, I got injured. And then I recovered, and slowly over time, because there were two teams. There was the academy team, and there was another team that was kind of like a B team. And initially I was put on the B team. And of course, now me as a 15-year-old, you know, feeling like I had a lack of confidence in myself. I had all these things that I'm dealing with. And of course, you know, in fact, if I'm really honest about it, you can say that, yeah, I had a good family upbringing, but there were things that I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell my parents things that I was experiencing, because I think that avenue was never made available to me. My parents at that time were very traditional, and just to see me express emotion that way, I don't think I even knew how to. So I ended up
to jump in there. You say traditional. I understand what you mean by that, but there's not many parents who'd actively search for an opportunity for their kid to move to North America at 15. So you say that, but obviously you got to look at from that point of view, they're very untraditional.
Yeah. Yes, true. I think yeah, for that I give them credit too, because they were very much, my parents come from, in fact, if you ask them, I don't know if they would say it, but they come from the village, you know, they are the ones who moved to Nairobi and made lives for themselves here in Nairobi. And my dad was very much the type of person who would say, I didn't have shoes until I was 10 years old. You know, you should be grateful. You're just spoiled kids, you know, all it was just a very, it's a very interesting upbringing that I had. But I'm very grateful for my parents, because they came from a background where they just wanted to provide everything for us, in the best way that they could, because they had experienced lack in their lives. So in that sense, yes, I think I owe them the world.
That's why you find a lot of parents will work hard. Sorry, did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that.
No, I just said that's why like parents work hard to hopefully give a better life to the kids. And that's what your parents did.
Yeah. I think the one area that we never really navigated as a family was how do myself and my brother as young men, how do we express our emotions? How do we say when we're struggling with things? Because we were expected to be very good at everything. And it's still something that I address with them now. But anyway, that's how it was for me. So when I was in IMG and you know, things maybe weren't going the right way, you know, I didn't know how to express all of those things. But at the end of my first year, of course, things got better because I really worked hard. And just the avenue was presented for me to put in the work. And because I can also say that because it meant more to me than some of my teammates, because, you know, some of them, they were staying, you know, in Florida. You know, it was, practice was just 20 minutes drive from their home. For me, I was miles away from my home, so the opportunity was just so big that I couldn't waste time. And so at the end of the first year, I started playing for the academy team, and I started to develop, you know, in a consistent way. So second year was more of the same. I just kept on playing and developing. In my last year, I played for the under 18 academy team, which was kind of like the flagship team of the academy. And I was playing well. I was playing okay. I would say we had quite a good team. In fact, Marlon Hairston, I don't know if you would know him, but he went to Louisville, is now playing for Minnesota in the MLS. He also played at Colorado Rapids. He was one of my teammates. There is Pablo Aguilar, who used to play at, I think it wasn't FC Dallas, it was Houston. He played in Houston in the MLS. He had gone to, I don't remember where he went to college. But we had a team of those kinds of players, you know. I think out of the 11 on the team that graduated, or the number that graduated, I know a lot of us went Division I, including me. So it was a very competitive environment and a very competitive team.
Kim, just to interrupt. Them players you mentioned who are now at the MLS, did you ever see anything? So they're playing professionally. Did you ever see anything in them that were like, wow, they're going to make it? Or were any surprises, any sort of traits, any sort of any strengths? Did you see their names on the rosters of these MLS sides and go, wow, how did they make it? Tell us what you think.
I think it's, of course, it's different for every player, but in the moment when I was playing with those guys, yes, we knew that they were good. But if you compared Marlon or Pablo with any of the other players on our team, there wasn't that much difference when it comes to their technical ability. Where they won was in their mindset. We had a coach who was, he would just destroy you. You make a mistake, you know, he'll shout from the sideline. He would just, there was a lot of pressure. But what players like Pablo and players like Marlon were able to do is just shut everything off and just enjoy, or look as if they're enjoying and just playing football. Whereas me, I'm very much a thinker. You know, I think about things and I'm evaluating everything and sometimes overthink things. And some of the other players on the team were like that. And in that environment, we didn't excel as well as they did.
Who's the coaches? It's an open forum. Who were the coaches there at the time? Who do you have?
We had Scott Dean and Scott Bowers. Scott Dean, I think, now runs the whole football academy. I think he's maybe the technical director. I'm not sure. Yeah. But I realized what he was trying to do and why he was so hard on us is he really prepared me for life in college, playing for a competitive team. Because, I mean, the amount of pressure he would put on us is, I would say, even in my first year at Oral Roberts University, where I eventually went, I didn't have that much pressure. So, I mean, as an under 18 player, I'm having more pressure than I would in college. And I think there was definitely some method to all the madness that we experienced. And I'll be grateful to him for that. So in my final year, I remember in January having no offers or anything like that. Even in February, nothing had come my way. At that time, I was still battling for a lot of playing time with some of the other players. And I would say I never really actively went out searching for help. I remember at the time there was this, I think it was called NSCA or something. I don't even remember what it was called. They used to help people get recruited into college teams.
Yeah, the online platform.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was still trying to understand everything. So I basically created my own highlight video from the videos that I had. And I created, basically put the video out there and sent emails to many different, I think I sent it to every single Division I team I could find.
Why only Division I? Because it's not like you're in the outside of the US right now. So then right now you're emailing coaches, just Division I coaches. What made you not email top Division II, top NAIA? I'm interested in all that process.
You know, I've never really thought about that, but I think at the time that was all we were exposed to. You know, Marlon had signed early to Louisville. There was another player on our team called Joey who was going to, I don't remember what team, it was a Division I team in Florida. And it was just like, yo, you have to go Division I, you have to go Division I. There was no, of course, at the end of it, you know, you realize, oh, wait, some of my teammates are actually going to, you know, good Division II schools, you know, then, and end up with just the same amount of opportunities. Or all of my experience of NIA only came after. But when I was in the thick of college recruitment and trying to do things myself, I only thought about Division I because, of course, I also had a big head. You know, I was saying, I have to go there because that's where I should be, you know. Yeah. But who knows what would have happened if I, you know, approached some of the top Division II teams, because once I finally got the experience of playing, in Division One and experiencing Division Two and NAIA, I mean, I looked at some of those teams and I was thinking, wow, this is really just like something that's put in your face. But really, when you're in it, some of those teams in Division Two and NAIA are much better than Division One teams. And that's what actually happened when I went to Oral Roberts. So I finished, you know, trying to send out all these emails and everything, and nothing really came my way. At the time, I was doing very well academically. I think I had something like a 3.6 GPA or something, and this is in college classes. So I was actually applying as a transfer student. So
how old are you right now? Is this at 16 or what?
No, this is 18. I'm 18 now.
Oh, so you've been at IMG for a few years now?
Yeah, for 3 years I was at IMG.
All right, sorry, I missed that. So
this is the end of my third year. So when I'm about to, you know, get to college. And so yeah, I was applying as a transfer student. So I had gotten academic scholarships from different places. I had gotten an academic scholarship from American University. I can't even remember some of these other places. I just don't remember. But because I was just so focused on football, at the same time, the University of Tampa was was interested in me, and so I had gone for an official visit there. I think at the time they were doing quite well in Division Two, so it was considered, you know, a good program, and I had experienced how things were there. It was a very nice campus, and the team was very nice to me. But it didn't give me the feel or the same feel of, you know, I can play here and then go professional. It seemed like they weren't as serious, you know, about how they're approaching things. Granted, I went in the spring when, you know, the season isn't in full motion. So I didn't really, there's something about it that didn't, I guess I wasn't fascinated by. But in, I think it was Dallas Cup. It was the Dallas Cup in, that was 2012, I believe, when the Oral Roberts coach approached me and he said, hey, we're interested in you. And, you know, after that, I kind of just followed up. And Oral Roberts was the only Division I team that the coach was actively recruiting me. So that's where I wanted to go, because I thought, you know, Division I is great. So that's what I did, is I went to Oral Roberts and I got a scholarship and I played there for my first year.
Do you think that you chose Oral Roberts over Tampa because of the D1 status?
Yeah, for sure. I knew that really? Was it. Yeah, because I had selected Oral Roberts without even doing the visit. I did the visit after I selected.
Well, let's just say, right, you can go back in time right now, and this is nothing wrong with Oral Roberts. I've had a number of players go there, and it's a good place. But what if you looked at Tampa and Oral Roberts on the table right now, and you've done visits for both of them? What would you still go with Oral Roberts, or would you go with Tampa? I'm just interested to know the truth.
Oh man, you know, the thing is, Oral Roberts, once I was in, there were many things wrong with that program. And granted, now the new coaching staff that came in a year after, in fact, it was the same year, they came in the same year when, you know, the coach that was there during my season left. And they have kind of transformed the program, because now I think they're a top 30, top 40 team. But at the time, I remember going in, you know, preseason was what it was. It was tough, of course, but I was coming from IMG where I felt like I was ready for that kind of thing. And, you know, even in my first year, I couldn't play because I wasn't cleared by the NCAA. So right. When I was eventually cleared, they gave me 1 year. It was actually 2 years to play because I was applying as a transfer student. And so what they did is they started my college clock at 15. So they, in their minds, I had already played 3 years of college soccer. So this is me as an 18-year-old coming in as a freshman. Yeah. And they're telling me, you only have 1 year to play. And so Now, this is all of the things I was finding out during the season. So I was not able, I never actually got onto the field. I would, you know, of course, take trips and everything, but we were trying to appeal for them to give me more years. At the same time, I don't want to use my year so that, you know, I lose my eligibility. So I wasn't able to play. But I was playing really well, and things were going, I mean, in terms of my performance, I was doing really well. And at the end of that season, when I came back in the spring, well, let me just say that the team was not doing well at all. I think we lost a lot of games. The coach that was there wasn't very good. The team needed to be restructured. And so the coach left, and we got a new coach in the spring season, and things started to change. So when things started to change, of course, the new coaching staff came in and they, you know, offered me a position to stay. But now, you know, I told them about my situation with the NCAA, and, you know, it's kind of, I had a choice to make. Either I stick with the NCAA and play Division I for one more year, or I can try and go to an NAIA team where now I would get, you know, 3 years of eligibility. So, of course, the choice was a no-brainer, and I had emailed many different coaches in the NAIA. I did the same process. You know, I created a highlight video for myself and sent it out to the top 20 NAIA teams. And the team that replied to me was Belhaven University, and they were national champions. There were other teams that replied to me as well, but, I mean, if in my mind, I said, okay, I'll go and play for the national champions because apparently they're the best team in the NAIA. And that's what
easy
I did.
Is that right?
I spoke to the coach, and he was like, you know, we want you here. You know, this is what we're prepared to offer you. It was a better scholarship than the one I had at Oral Roberts. And I was like, okay. You know, I never considered that it was in Mississippi. There's many things I didn't think about that I didn't know. And I almost wish that I had the guidance, but of course, hindsight is 2020. But I mean, I'm grateful for those experiences that I had. And so I moved to Belhaven University.
So you're now four or 5 years into the US experience, and you still doing this alone. Like I knew when you said like you finished your IGCSEs at 15 that. That's if you started the college classes, that's your timer starting from there. But if you'd have done like high school, you could have just extended your graduation day, and obviously that's boring stuff about the job, but that's why I've got a job. But like, I'm surprised that the IMG guys didn't know that. I'm not kind of putting any blame on them. I'm just wondering, like, no one really picked up on that. Even the college Oral Roberts coach didn't know that before you came in. Like, if you're a transfer student, you obviously started your timer, and it's obvious when you started your timer and how long you got left. It's pretty simple, really. And the NCAA it's difficult to navigate. I mean, you've kind of experienced it for yourself, but also like players, like, for example, Andrew Nemera and stuff like that, we've kind of dealt with client wise, but you've seen what even the NAIA is difficult as well, but it's a little bit more lenient, so that's why you've gone there, you've gone and you're now at NAIA, and then the journey starts there. You start playing straight away, or how was that?
Let me also say that I just wish I knew these things earlier, because, you know, from my parents' perspective, they're thinking, wait, our son can start college early. Oh, he's a genius, you know, let him do it, let him try, let's see, you know, maybe this is, you know, if he does well, he'll go to Harvard, you know. That's how a parent is thinking, without the guidance of, actually, you know, if he starts college now, his college clock is going to start, and it's going to limit him from opportunities in the future. Nobody said anything about that.
Which I find crazy, actually.
They didn't say anything about that until I was in Oral Roberts halfway through the season, and they're talking about, let's send appeals to the NCAA. And now I'm here just praying, you know, because I don't know what's going to happen to my career at that point. I don't know if I'm going to play. I don't know what, you know. So anyway, I was just grateful that, you know, I finally found a place that I could play, and, you know, they were excited to have me at Belhaven. And so I went to Belhaven, and the experience there was It was very interesting because his name is Brian McMahon.
It's called Mac. Everyone calls him
Coach Mac. I call him. Yeah, he's Coach Mac, and he's an amazing coach, and he's now at Palm Beach Atlantic, and they're doing great things there. And I'm very happy for him because I know, you know, it seems like out of all the coaches I had, he was one of them that I think his concepts and his teachings kind of stayed with me. But in that year, he had actually recruited, there were 70 players on the team. 70 players on the team. And they had just been national champions. So he was basically recruiting some of the best talent that, you know, international players. I don't think we didn't have a lot of Americans on that team. Most of the guys were just internationals. And so I go there, and the first week of preseason is just to separate the first team and the reserve team. And thankful to God that I made the first team, and, you know, I actually managed to get myself a starting place on the team. What I would say is that was one of the hardest periods of my career, simply because things outside of the football field were not going well for me. I was in my mind, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to go to this place and then maybe I'll be in a dormitory with all the other, you know, students or all the other players in my team. And that was not the case. You know, we were, many of my teammates were staying off campus in their own places. I was staying on campus by myself with a roommate that really was never around and was not a member of the football team or soccer team, sorry. And so I spent a lot of nights like just alone, you know, in my head and just not really anybody around me. And I think it started to show, especially during the first few weeks of the season when, you know, you get a starting spot and then I started to make mistakes on the field and, you know, things weren't going right for me. And I eventually lost my starting spot. And yeah, now I just started to serve my role from the bench. And I think it was because of all these things that I was dealing with. At the same time, Mississippi wasn't the best environment for me to be around, I would say. But I guess it's part of the journey.
Tell me more. Give me some more information about that.
I just felt very isolated. I felt as if, you know, I'm playing a match, you know, maybe I haven't played well, and then I just go back to my own room and I'm by myself and I'm just there, you know. I go to class by myself, you know. That's where I meet my teammates. My teammates at the same time, there wasn't like, you know, in different colleges, maybe I'd say at all Roberts we had, you know, you're staying on the same floor with all the soccer players, you know, and then the soccer players come and they invite you to everything. You know, you go to eat together, you go to class together, you're just always hanging out. So of course you build friendships that way. And it just felt like Kim is this outsider who is a good player, but he doesn't really have, you know, friends on the team. And maybe part of it was also me not engaging that well with my teammates, but it was just a difficult environment for me.
Sometimes it's not right for people. Yeah, it's good that you... And at the time, was it getting you down, or were you fine with it, or what?
It got me down, but you see, at the same time, playing and the coaches kept me up because they, you know, I think they saw something in me, and they were thinking... The player who eventually took my spot was a senior, you know, I think he was about 25 years old, to be honest. and he had played in the national championship team the year before. So I think in their minds they were like, okay, let him teach Kim how, you know, how to do this thing, so that when he next year and the year after that, you know, he can eventually get his chance. So it was still very much, I'd say, my experience in America in terms of the top teams is when you're a sophomore, it's still very much, hey, you're in this team, but you still have a few more years left. You know, you still have time to develop. You still have, so if there's a senior playing ahead of you, it's really not that bad.
You find a lot of players who turn professional don't play many minutes in the freshman sophomore years.
Yeah. And I think that is also just adapting to the environment, because it's different for everyone. It's different for everyone. So I experienced that first season, and we made it to the national tournament, and in the last 16 we lost. And then we were back in Mississippi, and that spring, Coach Mack has a meeting with all of us. It's one of the first meetings of the whole semester, and he tells us the school has decided to go NCAA Division III, and he's leaving to Palm Beach Atlantic. And I mean, it was just, you can imagine 60 plus players just being like, wow, I mean, this is it for us. I think many of the top players, I'd say the guys who were playing in the first team, it was very much like, okay, we have to go somewhere else. Because it was, I mean, we knew once, we just thought in our minds, if we're going to play NCAA Division III, we don't really think the opportunities are going to come our way.
When you say opportunities, you mean professional?
Yeah, professional opportunities. And many of the guys there were there because that was our aspiration. These are a lot of international players who are there to make it, essentially. We're not there to get necessarily just an education, or, we're there to try and make a life for ourselves through football. So once he says that, it just becomes like a mass exodus of players. I did the same process again. I made a video for my
on the move again.
Yes, I made a video for myself, a highlight video. I sent it out to, all the top 20 NIAE colleges. And at this point, I had some experience. I was coming from IMG, I played NCAA Division I, and I had played for the national champion team. So it was very easy. And in fact, Coach Mack was willing to help me. So I got recruited by the University of Rio Grande. And that was Coach Scott Morrissey and Tony Daniels. And that's what I did, is I over the course of, in fact, you know what's crazy? I actually got recruited by Mid-America Nazarene and the University of Rio Grande. And 2 years later, we met in the national championship final. So it's kind of like, regardless of which one I chose, we may have still ended up, playing against each other. Yeah. But I basically went on a visit. I took one trip and I went first to the University of Rio Grande in Ohio. I played, had a training session with them. Spent the night there. In the morning, I traveled to Kansas City. I was picked up by the coach, and I played a training session with Mid-America Nazarene, and then stayed the night there. And then the following morning, went back to Mississippi. So this time, I think I was more cautious in terms of, let me go and visit these places first before I make a decision. And I was contemplating everything in my mind. They gave me two different offers. They weren't that different. Both of them were very good scholarships. So I ended up selecting the University of Rio Grande simply because I felt like they had, I think at the time it was because I felt like they had a more professional team. I could point out to several players on that team and say, those guys are really good, whereas Mid-America Nazarene, I think they were still trying to rebuild, and it didn't feel like so much of a professional environment. And so that's where I went. This whole time as well, I'm playing in the summer. So I was playing PDL for my first year at Oral Roberts. I played at Springfield Demise, which was in Missouri. My second year, I went and played NPSL with in San Antonio. That was before I joined the University of Rio Grande.
How did you play in the summer? Just to kind of digress for 1 second, how did you get the opportunities?
I did the same process. I made myself a video and I sent it to all these different people. The Springfield one, I actually went for a tryout. The San Antonio one, once you're playing well in a college team, my experience is that some of the coaches can really help you find an opportunity. And so it was just one phone call that Coach Tim, who was there at the time, made a call and put me and just put my name up in one of these teams. And yeah, I was given housing and I was, you know, playing for that team for that summer. And I had some good seasons. It's just that we didn't, let's say I wasn't playing in the best division in the PDL. So it wasn't like all the eyes were on us anyway. But it was a good experience because it now prepared me to go to the University of Rio Grande. And so I went there, and it's very much in the middle of nowhere, but the team is very much together all the time, simply because of where you are. You know, everybody's staying on campus. It's just, it's a nice environment, I would say. And my first year, you know, I earned a starting spot on the team. I start playing. Eventually, I think we made it to, we were ranked number one actually for most of the season. And halfway through the first, my first season there, I started not playing as well as I should have. I think if I could say, if I could look back on my career, it was always a battle with my own self-confidence. Sometimes I would be the biggest player on the field, but perform, you know, in a small way. And it just kept on reflecting. I would always go to a team, preseason is great, you know, earn a starting spot, and then somewhere along the line, I wouldn't play as well as I should have. And so, anyway, we reached the...
How did that affect you? So you didn't play well. I'm sorry I keep turning this into a mental thing, but as a person, obviously, you're affected by a bad performance. So what did you do? What happened is kind of like it went spiral. I played bad, and you think about it, overthink about it, and you're training, and you got too much pressure on yourself to try and redeem yourself. Is that what happens?
Yeah, you know, in fact, I can even go deeper because I especially during this quarantine period, I decided to see a counselor, and it wasn't because there was anything particularly wrong with me. It was simply because I wanted to try it, and so. You know, I approached not in a very serious manner, you know, and I remember thinking before I saw the counselor if she would even understand me, you know. But I kid you not, in the first 30 minutes, she had kind of summed up my whole life, and I started to see things in a completely different way. And what she told me, or what I learned about myself during that process was that when I was younger, between the ages of 0 and 6, that's when most, you know, people's character is developed. My parents were not around a lot. And I was always, at the same time, my brother and I, we used to compete for everything. So I was very much trying to earn the attention of my parents. And what happened was I found football as a way of giving me what my parents couldn't, which is that love from the outside world. So football became a tool that I used to get love directed at me. And that later reflected in my career because I would play so that I can earn that from other people. And that's why I think I took it. I used to add a lot of pressure on myself because I knew that if I didn't play well, it wasn't just, hey, you didn't play well. It's you're not loved, you're not, now there's nothing about you that is praiseworthy or lovely about you. And I only realized that now at 26 years of age, which is just the other day.
It's interesting. A lot of this sort of thing does come back to parents, you find. I mean, I've personally never been to a therapist or anything like that. And but you hear a lot of stories where it stems from that. It doesn't mean your parents are bad people, just everyone's different. And not if everyone was the same in the world, it'd be a boring world. So everyone's got to turn out different. And some people do handle it better. Some people don't. Some people can kind of decipher what the issues are. And some people need someone to tell them. And it's good that you kind of found that out because you can kind of look back and go, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think
thanks for telling me that, by the way. That's good. I appreciate it.
No. I think it's important to share because I know that a lot of footballers deal with this kind of thing, especially when it comes to let's say you, for some reason, one or another, you have to, you know, cut your career short or something, and all you know is football because that's the only place you've put your identity in. It's really difficult. You know, you end up having a lot of anxiety and stress because football is all you know. So I think it's important if more footballers said these kinds of things, because I think at the end of the day, football is a tool. We won't have it forever. Nobody plays a career until they die. You know, it's usually something you use to achieve something else. And for me, it was to achieve the love and respect of people around me that I felt I couldn't get as a small boy. So I'm not saying it's like that for every player, but I sense that for a lot of players, there is something behind it that pushes them beyond the limit that, I mean, to do irrational things like leave your home at 15 years old and navigate America alone. But I only realize that now. And I guess I'm still thankful for that. And I don't blame my parents in any way because, I mean, at the end of the day, they did their best. And I'm very grateful for them. So that's where I would say that that lack of confidence came from, is when I performed badly, I wasn't thinking, this was all happening subconsciously, but I wasn't thinking, oh, this is just a bad game, tomorrow I can have a better game. I was thinking, no, now I've lost the love that, you know, it all reflected back to my childhood. And so it hurt me deeper than it would hurt most players. And that's why I think I started to spiral sometimes during the mid part of the season. So let me go back to the season, my first season at University of Rio Grande, where we were ranked number one going into the national tournament, and we lose the first game in the national tournament and we're knocked out by the host of the tournament. And it was really, really demoralizing. It was just a bad experience for all of us. The good thing was that many of us were coming back the following year. And that's what we did, is we just made sure that we came back stronger. So that year I went to Florida. That's where I met you. And I would say we had quite a good season in terms of,
sorry about that,
of how we played. I don't know how you would say that season went.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I was brought in. I can say all this now because it doesn't make no difference to me. But there's a lot of false pretenses. Like there was a lot of, like, the ownership just unrealistic in everything. They had a CEO who was just unbelievably egotistical and had no idea about anything. You had a head coach who, played at. Played at a good level, was knowledgeable, but was he couldn't pass that information across without spending an hour doing it. Whereas people who were trained and qualified would take 5 minutes to do it. He'd take an hour to do it. So then the players that had in were pretty good, and there was a good overall team, but they were just. There were things that weren't, for me, 100%. But yeah, to answer your question, there was a good team, and they did pretty well. I mean, it could have been better.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that we got from that season is, things could have been better. But I always thought, you know, okay, there's one more season I have of college. Let me go back and make sure that this is the best, you know, that I can make it. So I went back now as a senior, and... Same thing happened, actually. You know, you start performing well, you get a starting spot, and then spiral out and start not playing as well as I should have. Though what happened was, this is crazy actually, thinking about it now, towards the end of the regular season, I kind of just said, you know what, I'm tired of, you know, making football matter so much. Because I was getting to a point where I was having sleepless nights because I wasn't, you know, playing as well as I could have, and I couldn't understand it. You know, it was very much before that season had started, it was very much like, you know, Kim is coming to start, Kim is coming to play, be one of the leaders on the team, and it just couldn't make that happen. And it was becoming really frustrating for me. And I just decided, okay, if this is my last time playing college soccer, let me just enjoy it. And that's exactly what I did. I just tried to enjoy it as much as possible. I started playing as a striker, actually, because one of the coaches said, hey, you know, maybe you want to try. And so I started playing there in training, started scoring goals, because in my mind, I was like, I'm just going to have fun, you know. And I think it was the first time in a really long time that I had actually just said, you know what, let me just have fun playing football.
By this point there, you're saying, I'm going to have fun. Are you now saying, I'm not going to turn professional. I've given up on kind of taking things really serious and doing the extra 10%. I'm just going to have fun. Is that right? Or are you still believing there's opportunities afterwards?
No, I was still like, there's opportunities after. It's just a current period in my life where I just need to enjoy it. And, you know, once the season is over, then I can, you know, go look for these different opportunities. But for now, you know, why not just enjoy? And so I started playing more often. I was coming off the bench. I think the last 8 games leading up to the national tournament, the final, I had scored, I think, 4 or 5 goals. So I was coming off the bench and, you know, like having a good time. I even stopped being anxious about games. I was really just enjoying myself. And, you know, the crazy thing is when I was playing in Kenya, that's where I used to play. I used to play as a striker. So it started to remind me of the times when I used to really enjoy football. And yeah, so we go into the national tournament. We're ranked number one again. And this time it's kind of like everybody is focused. You know, everybody knows what to expect. Everybody, it was the same venue. And I think we didn't concede a goal the whole national tournament. We played the first game, we won 2-0. I scored in that game. Second game, we won 3-0. And now we're in the, I think that was the semis. Yeah, it must have been the semis. We're in the semis and we play a really good, it was Missouri Valley. They were a really good team and they almost took us to overtime, but we managed to score. And then we're in the final and it's Mid-America Nazarene against University of Rio Grande, you know, and it's a big game. And I honestly think they played better than us. I honestly do. We started to get some injuries. So I was playing a lot at that point, you know, as a striker. And at the same time, you know, you're tired, they took us to overtime. So now, you know, I start the overtime and I'm playing and I mean, everybody's just so tired. And I remember that time there was the wind was so strong, so much so that if you're playing against it, you almost couldn't get out of your own half. So we decided in the first half of overtime that we are going to play with the wind to see if we can, you know, get a goal. And when we go onto the field, Mid-America actually plays better than us. I think they even struck the bar. And nobody had even gone that close to scoring against us. So we're all now thinking, whoa, okay, this is serious. And then we get a free kick with 5 minutes left in the first half of overtime. And my teammate, Jeremy De Hoog from Holland, he steps up to take the free kick. I go in the box. We're all in the box. You know, I'm thinking, we just need a goal, you know, and I'm quite a big person. So I'm thinking if he can get this on my head, maybe, you know, I can score. I'm trying to visualize everything in my head. And he goes for goal and he hits it. This is from, I think, 30 yards or something. It's just crazy. There's a video of it as well. And it just flies into the top corner. You know, I was looking at it and I'm thinking, wait, where's it going? It's not a cross, you know? And halfway through the flight of that ball, I'm thinking the keeper's not going to get that ball. And it just flew into the top corner and the game is over. And at that point, it was just like, I couldn't believe it. Everybody just couldn't, you know, everybody just rushes off the bench. Everybody's crying. It's just crazy. And that's a moment that's a moment I'll share with my teammates that I honestly will never forget.
So then that happens. what happens after all that then? What's tell us a little bit about the next steps.
So I'll try and move a bit faster to the next part so that
that's cool.
I feel like this story is so long.
Hey, so we finished people that. Interested.
We finished the regular season national champions. We come back, you know, we're celebrated. We end up going to like the Columbus Crew Stadium. We end up going to FC Cincinnati Stadium, and like people just, you know, celebrating us everywhere. And it's a great experience for us. But at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, I want to pursue professional opportunities. So I started looking for different ways, and there was two combines that I went to. A combine is like a trial. I know you know, but maybe some people may not know. So I went for the InfoSport combine. I think you know it. Chris, you there?
Say that bit again. Sorry.
Yeah, I went for the InfoSport combine. I think you know it, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I was on mute. I was trying to speak, but
no way. So yeah, I went for this combine, and it's one that I think it's infamous. It's not, people tell you don't go. Other people tell you, you know, maybe you should just try it. Well, I said, okay, let me just try and go. And it was in Florida. It was basically, in fact, it was a month after the national tournament. So I came home to Kenya and went back almost immediately. I didn't stay for long. So at that point, I was coming back around once a year. Maybe once every 1.5 years to see my family. But I went back to take part in that combine. It went quite well for me, to be honest, because I was selected in the, there's what they do is they have like, I mean, there were so many players there. I think around 300 players, and you're just put in many different teams and you're watched over 3 days. And on the last day I was put into the select team. So it's the best of all the players that are there, and you know, all the scouts come to watch those games. So I was put into that. Unfortunately, nothing really came from it. I think I got maybe a bit of interest, but they were asking for a US passport or a green card. So it was my first time experiencing this whole, you know, limit on international players within the US. And I think it's something that I only really understood at that point, that if I'm not a US citizen, or if I don't have a US passport or a green card, it's actually harder for me to play in the US. And so I start looking for other opportunities. I went for a soccer visa trial. I don't know if you know Joe and soccer visa.
Chris. I know soccer visa, but I don't know the people behind it.
Okay. So I went for this one in Florida. And honestly, I would say I was one of the best players there, but I kind of took it with a big head and I didn't perform. I didn't make it known, you know. I was just performing at where I should have performed. I think I could have done a lot better, but nothing came from that. And so, in the summer now, I go back to Florida. I go back to Southwest Florida Adrenaline and play PDL1 again. And so that PDL season didn't go well for the team, but for myself, I was selected as an all-conference player. And so I'm thinking, okay, I won a national championship, you know, I was selected in the InfoSport combine in the select team. I've been selected as an all-conference player in the PDL. You know, now I should get something, you know, at least
something
in my head.
That's should. Not, yeah, something should. You'd think so, right?
Yeah, but nothing. I mean, I got like, I would always have enough to get through the door in terms of I could speak to the coaches because I would send them, this is my CV. You know, this is my video. I mean, at that point, I have so many videos. I had everything in terms of what you would think one would need, you know, and just nothing was happening because they kept coming back with, do you have a US passport or a green card? And I didn't.
And but so, you know what? I'm going to jump in there on that one, right? People really underestimate the fact you've got to create like a profile of yourself during college. Like everyone turns professional aren't necessarily the best players. Obviously a lot of them are good players, but it's kind of like people who just everyone knows about. It's kind of like you have to have a profile, and it's very rare that somebody like that no one's ever heard about. I understand that if you're a good player, people will know about you naturally, but it's just you've got the visa and the passport situation against you, right? But a lot of teams, if you're good enough, they'll get you on as a international player. Simple, really. Yes, it's easier if you're a US passport or a green card. If you graduate with college, you can do the OPT thing and, like, I don't know, kind of go from that sort of way. But yeah, there's lots of different ways of doing it. If I'm a firm believer, if you're good enough, you're meant to be. And then sometimes it's just not the right place. I mean, America might not be the right place for you. You've got a good period there. And who to be honest with you, I found it a shame that you never got anything in the States. But what can we do? Can't go back in time. We have to learn from this sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you completely. And I think one of the realizations I had to make during that time was I had to tell myself, hey, Kim, they're not selecting you not because you don't have a green card or a US passport. It's because you're not good enough. And once I kind of accepted that, I started to work much harder. And I worked hard thinking that, okay, now I have to be better than the Americans that are around me. And so I got two trials in November of 2016. And in my mind, I told myself, hey, these are the last two trials that I'll have as a player. Because I know at this point, I've tried everything, you know. In my mind, that's how I was thinking. These are the last two trials. I'll prepare for them. And let's just see where this goes. If I turn professional from this, great. If I don't, at least I can rest my head at night and say, you know, I did the most with the talent that I had. And so I went for, it was with Sporting Kansas City. It was an invitational trial. And I went there. Again, roughly about 50 players there. We played over 2 days. In fact, what the crazy thing is, I went for this trial at Sporting Kansas City, which was on a Saturday and Sunday. At the same time, I was invited to a soccer visa trial. That was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So what I did is I went for the Sporting Kansas City trial, played the first day and the second day. At the end of the second day, I rushed home, packed all my bags, went to the airport and traveled to Connecticut to play in the soccer visa trial. And I got to Connecticut around, I think, 11 p.m. at night. I couldn't rent a car because I was too young. So there was somebody I was supposed to meet there. His flight came in around midnight. We had a problem getting the rental car. We eventually got it around, I think it must have been like 1:30 a.m. And then we drove to Danbury, which is about 2 hours. I ended up sleeping at 4 a.m. and the trial was starting at 8 a.m. in that same morning. So it's just, I say this because I think a lot of people think the journey is somehow very formalized and very, you know, you play well and you do this. But in my experience, it was very much like you earn the opportunities and, you know, it's rough. It's not how you expect it to be. And I didn't get anything from the Sporting Kansas City trial.
Any feedback?
In fact, I didn't get any feedback at all. I think I spoke with the center back who played next to me because I knew that we both played well in the first day. On the first day, I would say that him and I were probably some of the better center backs there. And he was invited to preseason, I wasn't. And I think that was because of the second day. The second day, I just happened to be in a team that I would say wasn't very good. So I didn't end up shining as much as he did. So
what happened to him eventually?
I don't think he ended up signing or anything like that. I don't know, I haven't spoken to him in a while. But you know, the soccer world is so fast. You know, you meet somebody one day, you play in the same team and now you're best friends, and then 2 days later you don't know where they are, you don't know, you know, that's just how it is. So I went to the soccer visa trial and I just took all the pressure off myself and I said, you know, this may be the last time that I'm playing football like this again. Let me just enjoy it. And that's what I did. I think I played some of the best football that I've played. And on the final day, there was a coach there from FC Lahti in the Finnish Premier League. and he invited me to preseason with the team. And so now I'm thinking, oh, this is great. You know, this is my dream. And I kind of had one of those moments where time slows down and you feel like this is everything I ever worked for. So, you know, thank God. Fast forward, I came home, I'm preparing for the trial. I start playing with a professional team here. Start to
What are your parents saying right now at this point? 23, 24?
I was 22 at the time.
Okay.
I just turned 23. So they're just thinking, you know, Kim is still very much pursuing, you know, professional football. And now, look, he has an opportunity. So, you know, let him go for preseason with this team and see how it goes, you know. So I come home, you know, I spend time with them, and then I start training again. And 2 weeks before I'm supposed to go, the person who was acting as my agent at the time basically told me that they can't take another international player. And the coach reached out to me and he told me, yeah, he's tried everything, but they can't take another international player. At that point, I think I felt a lot of different kinds of emotions. But you see, I had already gone through the process of, okay, whatever happens from this, at least now I know, you know. I think what I wanted in my life with regards to football is just to prove a lot of people wrong and to prove myself right. And when I met, you know, that coach and he said, hey, you can play at this level, it kind of proved a lot of things for myself. And I know a lot of people say, hey, I could have kept playing, you know, I could have found another opportunity. And I think some of the soccer visa guys didn't really understand when I told them that I think I'm okay. I don't want to continue pursuing it. Because maybe there could have been other opportunities for me, but I think I was at peace. And I don't regret that decision at all, because it's brought me to where I am today. And I can say that helping other players to achieve these opportunities is much more fulfilling than playing ever was to me. So
I'm just going to jump in there. I mean, like, I always say to people, as I said before, if you're good enough, you're going to make it. And like, you got told there, it's almost like your journey was to be told that you could probably, by the sounds of it, didn't want to, but maybe didn't have that extra 2% that you needed to, which that 2% is the real want to do it. So like, anybody else would have been like, you've been told you're good enough for this level, you'd have been like, right, let's get onto the other teams then. Let's see what else is about. But you were just kind of happy to be told that. And then you're like, I'm at peace now. And I remember all this happening. I remember you documenting it and stuff pretty well. I remember thinking, yeah, he's at peace. That's cool. And that's, everyone's individual and everyone, it's all about themselves. But yeah, it's just maybe you didn't have the extra 2% to then step up and kind of do that. That's not me digging at you or anything like that. That's just like maybe trying to break it down in my own head. Because if you were going to make it, you'd have gone for it. But I think the journey you've had and then everything, I mean, like, obviously I've known you a while and there's a lot of that stuff you've said so far I didn't know about. There's a lot of stuff I definitely didn't know about. It's quite a journey. Yeah. And you're now like, I'm at peace, but you've got so much knowledge that, I mean, that's why I wanted you kind of involved with us, because you've got so much knowledge, and experience of the whole, like, not just like this whole America journey, blah blah blah, just like everything in general, where you can help people. So that's where you're at now. So you've I'm gonna jump in there and say you moved back to Kenya, Nairobi, and you've been there since. And then what's been going on?
Yeah, so there was a period beginning of 2017 where I told myself, you know what, let me just try and do something else apart from football, you know, and what I realized is that my experiences were so, for this region of the world, they were so unheard of and so rich that I would have parents come up to me and they know my journey and they say, you know, can you please mentor my son? Can you? So I thought to myself, okay, let me write a book. And so that's what I did. I wrote a book and I self-published it and I started to, you know, try and help people that way. But the more I tried to run away from it, the more I realized that I could help some of those students. And I knew that this is it just felt like the right thing for me to do, especially given the opportunities that I had. And so I got involved with Green Sports Africa. That didn't work out completely. And I spent quite a bit of time there just trying to get, you know, some students some opportunities. And through you, I think we've been able to send 5 players on soccer scholarship opportunities from Kenya. And since that time, and in around mid last year, that's when I started True Talents of Africa, which is our academy at the moment. And since then, I mean, it just feels like my life has kind of come full circle. And now I realize that the experiences I have, there's a reason why I had them. And I honestly believe there's a reason I stopped when I did, because it was kind of like perfect timing. And I'm a firm believer in things happen for a reason. And I have a lot of faith. And my plan or my ambition is to start a school here, a football academy that is a school that can just help not even necessarily footballers, but, you know, young boys and girls who just want opportunities in their life to become better men and women. And I think if you take the principles of football and teach them in the right way, you can do that. At the same time, I also want to give them opportunities, because I see a lot of myself in many of the players that I coach now. I just see myself as one of them, and I see the struggles that they're going through, and I just want to help them in the biggest way possible, because I know what it would have meant to me back then. Because nobody taught me about nutrition. Nobody taught me about, you know, these are where the opportunities are. Honestly, in fact, sometimes the way I think about it is, if I was a young boy and I had met me how I am now, I think I would have just latched on and been like, please help me, because there was just no guidance at all. And I feel like it's the same now, but I see myself and the rest of the coaches at TTA and the people around me as we are the ones to kind of try and change the future of many of these aspiring players in our country and in this continent. So I'm just really thankful that it happened the way it did.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, you kind of said before, so it's kind of like, it's awesome to have somebody like you for these people and families in well, not just in Nairobi, not just Kenya, but East Africa, the whole continent. It's kind of there's not many people in the whole continent who can kind of have that knowledge that you've got. Because you've come on board with us, and we're starting the SIUSA Africa division situation, and that's hopefully going to help a lot of players over the next years, kind of give them the opportunities that right now, to put it frankly, people kind of always have a little joke about, like, getting emails from African kids who are desperate to kind of get seen, and it's kind of delete. But there's end of the day, there's a human being. There's a human being behind that email. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, we have only so much time in the day to look after people and do stuff. But if we can kind of proactively put our heads together and kind of put ways for people to kind of, I mean, we've talked about plans that we're going to do and stuff, and not necessarily big high financial things. This is things where we're going to help the ordinary boy to kind of go down this pathway or whatever pathway it takes, but we're going to be there to kind of help people progress. And there's a lot of talented footballers and ambitious, talented people in the continent, so hopefully we can do good things over the years. And like, say, you're the perfect person in my eyes to kind of lead that. You've got the right passion for it. You've got the knowledge as well, which is to keep talking about. But yeah, it's just great to have you on board with that one. But just kind of looking to wrap up. Apologies that this is going longer than I told you it would. I wasn't going to stop
because story.
No, I was interested, and I'm sure a lot of people will be interested. So, right, let's say there's Well, anyone could be listening to this, but let's specifically like somebody from Kenya or even just any African player. What sort of advice would you have for them looking to kind of follow your footsteps in a sense of like go to college? You've gone definitely a very unconventional route of doing this. it's not the typical. So let's not kind of go down that route. But we've spoke about this before, and even yourself, like you thought you were going to play for Arsenal, and that was kind of the ambition. When there's nothing wrong with ambition whatsoever. Like it's good to have that, because if you're not going to get anywhere without ambition. But breaking it down, like what do you tell the players out there what to expect? Because I know you've been dealing with that. How to get from A to B, basically.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the challenge is, it's not as, you know, when you advise a player, let's say in the West, whether it's the UK or the US, and you tell them, you know, what they should be doing, the structures are already there for them to kind of succeed in that particular thing. So you may tell them, you know, train harder. And then there is a club that is, you know, training consistently every week, or there is academies that they can join, or there is a pathway for them to go down that will get them to where they want to be. In Africa, it's just those things don't exist for us. And that's why I see it very much as our responsibility to kind of create those things. And so my advice always to these players is I'm trying to show them just how demanding this career path really is, because you can imagine somebody who's never had the exposure of seeing, you know, top quality professional players or seeing the path that it takes to get to that level, you almost kind of have a fantasy in your head and you're thinking, oh, okay, it's really not that hard. You know, I can go from playing in Nairobi to playing for Arsenal, you know, tomorrow, because I feel like I'm that kind of player. And kids are young and they're naive. They don't really know. And trying to educate them on just how much it takes to even get close to that level, I think is something I'd want to do. But more importantly, I just want to create the structure that would enable them to pursue it in a genuine way. So if that's in the form of, you know, this a football academy that we can have, that we're bringing, you know, students in where they're training 5-6 times a week, I know that then eventually, you know, we can help them to get to where they want to be, because now there is a structure in place. And even working with the Ministry of Sports here in Kenya, there really isn't the system of development. When you take a young child from, let's say, 12 years of age to 18, this really isn't there in our country. And so I'm just trying to make sure that they don't experience what I experienced, and there is some kind of structure there. So I want to advise them, but at the same time, I know it's also on people like me to create the structures for them to access those opportunities.
Yeah. I agree. And that's what people do. Every generation, like the generation after you, they're young, they can't do a lot of things, they can't create these structures. So it's like it takes people from the generation before to kind of put them structures in place, which is, there's very few people who can do that and have that experience that you've got. So it's kind of a lot is on your shoulders, which, to be honest with you, it's exciting. Like it's an exciting lifetime ahead, because you've got the kind of the whole world to work with and the kind of continent to work with. And it's going to be like unbelievable. Let's say a conversation in 10 years from now, ever talk and we're like, wow, look what's happened in 10 years. It's amazing. And it's just like, it's like anything in the world. Like it's like NASA, like the generation before got to the moon and then they tested things out and tested a space flight. And then after that, the generation afterwards, right. Okay. That worked. Now we're going to build on that. And we've got the structure in place for that. It's like everything. So it's going to be awesome. But yeah, look, I probably need to start wrapping up really now. My next question was like, really, like, yeah, what's your future plans and ambitions? But I'm guessing you kind of answered that with saying you want to put the structures in place. Or is there anything else you've got future ambitions?
It's building a school. I think I've noticed that is the one way that you can actually help more students, because that is always the challenge that I have, is I'll have somebody, you know, with our current model, we partner with schools. But you see, not everybody goes to one particular school. And there's many students that contact us from all over Africa, and you it's just really difficult to tell them, okay, you need to come to this school so you can be part of this program. It just, the process is too long. But if you had, you know, a residential academy where kind of like the one I experienced at IMG, and you're telling these students, okay, this is the way to go. Come here first, you know, we'll evaluate you, we'll see, you know, we'll help you. We'll just try to give them as much guidance as possible. You know, even looking at things like nutrition, you know, the mental side of the game, and just all of these things need to be monitored so that we can genuinely have more players getting more opportunities. Because there's nobody doing it for us. There's just nobody doing it. And so that is my plan, or that is what I believe for the moment. That is what I believe. That's the path that we're going down.
So if there's any people out there with spare millions of dollars, any philanthropists who want to kind of get involved and kind of change a lot of lives, get in touch with Kim, I guess.
Really, they really should, because there's just so many young players, young aspiring athletes that we need to help. And
I've seen it myself. Like, I remember when I came to visit a couple of years ago, and I was like, a couple of players, I even said to you, I was like, that player there, if he was in England, he would be a professional club right now. And just because where he's born, like, he's not. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like,
stupid.
Man. It's just, it is what it is. It's the world. Like, I mean, we're all trapped in our countries right now, I guess, but it's unfair if their talent is not really seen by everyone. But you get in there, it's good. It's a good job what you're doing with the True Talents of Africa stuff. It's good what you did with the Green Sports Africa guys. And obviously now you're doing the SIUSA Africa stuff as well on top of that. So it's going to be really, really good to see that. But is there anything you want to add to any of this before I kind of do wrap up?
No, just to say thank you to you. And you've been a big part of my journey, and a big help to many of these young athletes. I mean, there are stories that I get that maybe I haven't even gotten to you about, you know, there's a player I spoke to just the other day, and he was a day away from quitting and going to university here. And, you know, that's when he finally got an offer to the SIUSA program. And it's there's a lot of good that you're doing, and maybe you don't hear it on a consistent basis, but I think there's more we can do, and I'm just thankful to be a part of this thing now.
Yeah, we'll try to do it better. We've all made mistakes and try to learn and try to always improve the processes, which is why I asked you to come on board with it all. But anyway, cool. All right, Kim. Well, I've really enjoyed that. I'm sure people have as well. If anyone wants to get in contact with you, like, how can they do that? What are you on, social media, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on social media, Kimathi Kambudho. They may even have trouble spelling that, but
it's all right. We'll put that in the podcast comments. It's in there. We'll link it.
Sure. Yeah, and if they want to, I mean, SIUSA Africa. I think they would be able to find me.
We'll put in the description of wherever this is, on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, whatever it's on, it'll have the contact details for Kim, but he's very open. I'm sure he'll happy to accept any direct messages, inbox, emails. You've even got an email with us now, kim@ sportsrecruitingusa.com, so I'm pretty sure you'll be able to answer any questions as well if anyone has any. So cool. Right, Kim, sure. Well, thanks for everything. Awesome, like I said, to have you on board, and I appreciate you opening up and telling everyone the story, how it is, and hopefully this podcast might help just one person, which is what it's all we want, really. And that's why we do it. That's why we just spent nearly 2 hours talking.
But right, sure. Yeah, thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Right.